Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Propaganda is brought to you by Levi Solicitors. 10% off your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. Dan, Michael and Rob with you today on the podcast where we find out what's been said about Leeds United, both by you and the opposition fans. You can also watch this on YouTube if you're listening to the audio version and vice versa. First, we're going to get the Leeds United fan opinion. Our TSB Plus subscribers sent us their feedback on the match ball for the Southampton game, which, let's be honest, was a low point. Before we get into that, we should say that Moscow is not here today. Rob, you are sitting in for Moscow.
No pressure.
We've taken his phone off him.
Because there was a lot of unhappiness at his silence in the early minutes of the match ball. So he has been referred to HR for performance review, and we'll let you know how that gets on.
It's Tyler Roberts I feel sorry for. Who's going to be there to defend him relentlessly in the face of all evidence?
There was a funny comment on Wacko, and I haven't got it in front of me, the webpage, to say it at the minute, but somebody said that Tyler Roberts should come on here to defend Moscow's performance on the match ball at the weekend. So, we miss you, big guy. Right, okay, what should we talk about then? The feedback we received from TSB Plus subscribers on what was a very difficult day, Saturday. How should we do this? Because it was miserable, wasn't it? It was a very, very miserable experience, to the point where actually the monetization, like the ads on YouTube, it was flagged up for inappropriate content. And I don't know if that's because we were so depressing, and it might have been because you suggested people go and imbibe alcohol.
Oh, possibly.
To excess. I don't know if that was...
There was a fair bit of swearing on it, I think, as well, which may have been an issue.
But I appealed it and it got unread flagged, which was good. A human looked at it, not just the algorithm. Right, so I think we should start with... Where is it? I'm scrolling down all the... Oh, God, that's miserable. So is that. Let's have a look.
I mean,
where was the one we were too positive?
I mean, Phil watched that.
There we go.
Phil watched the match ball and decided that we'd obviously been on the happy pills. The team and game was dire. I mean, I don't know which bit of that he watched or listened to and went,
those guys are having a great time.
That was overwhelmingly positive. Tell it how it really is. I mean, yeah, I didn't think there was anything positive.
No, no redeeming features for the first time in a long time.
I gave it a listen, and it was one of those weekends where I was like, right, that's enough football for the weekend now. I'm just going to turn my phone off, not look at the internet, and pretend that football doesn't exist, because that makes me much happier.
I'm never going to go, woe is me, about this, because it's great to do this, but you do have to accept like the rough with the smooth. And the last thing I wanted to do after that game was talk about it or dwell on it for the weekend, because it did completely ruin my Sunday. Despite me knowing it's just a silly football match, I was in a really foul mood on Sunday and I couldn't shake it.
Should have done what Moscow did and just play a game on your phone for 10 minutes.
Straight under the bus now he's not here.
I know. I think Moscow's problem, in fairness, is captured by the lack of positives that people were able to isolate, in that he's generally the one that you look to find something good in Tyler Roberts. But I think he was left devoid of anything on the weekend.
There was very little to cling on to, was there, with that one? Let's run through some of the headlines then, because we divide these up into sections on our notes. I mean, you can't see them, but how bad we were is the top one. Who do we blame? People now worried. Energy levels, lack of depth. We're already relegated. That'll be a good one. We'll start with that. Second season syndrome. Missing personalities. Rodrigo, our lack of midfield. Back three. Bielsa. We do have a positive or two there. Transfer business. And... Hilton Crowther is back from beyond the grave, suggesting the Eddie solution is the right one, which is put Jacko in and play the kids. Panic by Lewis O'Brien and Che Adams in January.
Get John Kevin Augustin back. That's what I say. Sorry, buy him for the first time. Have a look at him. He's probably cheaper now than when we first...
Would he be better than Rodrigo?
It's a good question.
I really like Rodri. Let's be positive, right? Okay, we've got two ways we can approach this podcast. We can wallow in it more, or we can be really positive. Rodrigo, he's a dead nice guy.
How do you know?
You can just tell, can't you?
I saw him in Armley setting fire to cats.
Really?
No, that's not true, obviously. Yeah, he seems nice, doesn't he?
Yeah, nice guy. Very, very gentle personality.
There's a bit of an issue. I mean, I'm not that nice. I'm fairly nice, but would you want me playing up front for Leeds United at the moment?
You might have been more effective on Saturday than
That's the thing.
Than those chumps.
What could I have done worse? Would be the issue. He did barely touched it, did he? Was the main problem.
I mean, you got into the point in the last 5 minutes of the game of counting the touches, but not manually. I mean, you went to a stats website.
Yeah, I think he'd had 22 touches.
But to be fair, one thing we didn't mention, I mean, and James and Ant both pick out Rodrigo, and actually, there is apology contained within this. Like, Ant even says he hates to jump on the bandwagon, and trying to be a fan of his, he just didn't show up with anything. But there was no service, was there, at all? Like, I think the problem was probably the totalness, a lack of outball from defence into midfield, and what midfield. They were pretty woeful on Saturday.
I have written an article for the blog comparing this defeat at Southampton, because there was all this talk of where does it rank among Bielsa's worst performances. It's right up there. It's the worst we've ever played. And I don't know, you don't have to go that far back to find us playing that badly. And I compared it to the Brighton game at the end of last season when we went there and there was no Phillips, there was no Rafinha. We were terrible. Bamford played up front that day and he had 15 touches, which was even fewer than Rodrigo in an hour. And he got hooked off. And it was, it was pretty rank. And yeah, the Southampton game was very much of a muchness in that case. And actually, I think the one brief glimmer of hope I take out of it is that the way Bielsa responded to that Brighton game was he picked the exact same team against Tottenham and they were brilliant. So these don't just become bad players overnight. That doesn't mean they can't play badly like as they did at the weekend.
So you promise they're going to play well. Great. Well,
I don't want to promise it, but that's about as positive as I've got.
But you're right, though. Based on historic evidence, there is a positive reaction in this somewhere, you'd hope.
It's the overall context of it, isn't it? Like that Brighton game came at a time when we were fairly all right in the league. We'd played well in fairly recent memory. Things didn't feel like they were dropping apart in quite the same way as they do now. But I mean, we went into the international break and we were all giddy off a win. We were seeing Rafinha being brilliant and it was like, oh, well, this is all going to be fine. Then we turned up at Southampton and Christ, we were like, all the problems we'd more or less forgotten about for a week were so evident.
You know, when we played Brighton, was that off the back of an international break or going into one?
I couldn't remember now. That was the game where everyone was like, right, Alioski needs to go. Mm. That was sort of his
him now, aren't we, Rob? We're missing him.
Well, where's Firpo exactly? Where's our replacement? But yeah, then, like you say, we were a lot more forgiving. And I listened back to that podcast and even you were talking about Bamford and you were saying, well, he just didn't get any service. So that's kind of, it's not really his fault. Whereas with Rodrigo, it's very much the opposite reaction. I think the problem we've got is that everyone was saying, well, he's not a number 10, so he needs to play number 9. He's played number 9. He had a couple of good games, but he's not scored. And then he has a game like that and he just doesn't have the credit in the bank, does he? Yeah, no. Which I think is the problem.
That was the thing Bamford used to struggle with until last season. Even when he played well and did something, he never did it quite consistently enough or scored enough goals in the Championship that when he had a bad game, people were willing to accept it. It was always like, well, someone else would be doing a better job than this. And then last year, he essentially just got rid of that entirely because he started the season well and played well throughout. And he's reached a point now where he can have bad games and fans can stomach it. Whereas with Rodrigo, people are sort of at the end of their tether with him to a large extent at the moment because the thing was that he's not had a chance in the team and now he's got one and it's just not working at the moment.
I think it's quite telling as well that Bielsa's quite quick to sub him off at times. He's been taken off at half-time quite a bit, even though we had a pretty weak bench at the weekend. It was, was it just after an hour he went off? It was like, well, it's not working, so we're going to have to change it.
Yeah, Brighton, there was no international break. We played Man United on the 25th of April, drew 0-0 at home, and then we went there on the 1st of May and lost 2-0. So that's that theory out of the window.
But, 0-0 against Man United was a good performance and a good result. So you go away and you lose and it's, we were already very comfortable in the league at that point, weren't we? It was all fine. Whereas as it is, we're looking at being a Newcastle win away from relegation zones.
But also, we're only one win away from being 14th.
You don't look that way, do you, when things are going badly? You only look down.
Well, Roger suggests that we need to get used to what this is going to be like. He said, need to get a foretaste of how we'll line up next season when Rafinha and Phillips are sold. Hundreds of millions wasted on Costa, Casilla, Augustin,
who?
Rodrigo, Koch, James, but still stuck with a tired Championship midfield. perhaps it is just that the money's not being entirely wasted on all those players, but we still just do need a midfielder. That I would argue that.
The Victor Orta angle on it is weird because I feel like 6 months ago everyone was saying how brilliantly we'd done to not get Ben White, and instead we've got Llorente and we've got Koch, and we've made some really good investments in, like, Melier has been a brilliant signing for the money, and it feels like that's now almost flipping back where people are saying, well, he's just bought all these shit injured players. What the fuck? What's he actually doing? He needs to go as well. And it's like, well, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle, in that obviously we should have bought a central midfielder, and the club know we should have bought a central midfielder because we tried to sign a year ago Cuisance, we tried to get Gallagher, we tried to get O'Brien from Huddersfield.
Keep failing though, don't we, Michael? That's the point.
Well, that's the thing, but they're aware of the issue, and the fact we haven't signed it is definitely on the club.
It's a failing, isn't it? But
it is.
I'd like to know why we haven't. I'd like to understand more about the dynamic of player recruitment. I mean, we had Victor Orta in here and spoke to him and didn't really get a proper chance to kind of get too much into that granular side of things, but he did say, you know, they've got like they narrow it down to 2 or 3 targets for each position. It does beg the question as to why they've not been able to address that in 2 consecutive summers, and then obviously they don't like doing business in January, but who knows if maybe they'll act this time, because I just think we need an extra body in there.
Bielsa's influence on it all is kind of a strength and a weakness. Like, when he's talking about he wants a small squad and he has a certain value of a player, and I like those things about him. And you know, if the club's approach is to invest in the under-23s and for Bielsa to develop them, then again, like, I can see the logic in that. But the problem is if Bielsa's talking about, well, he don't want to play these young players in pressurised situations, that's why he wants his senior players to stand up.
But they're all broken, Rob.
This is the thing, but which was the case with Cresswell and Llorente coming back in. But then when you look at the bench at the weekend and that the senior players are injured and we just got a bench full of kids, when it is a pressure situation and we need to go for a win, you can't change it then. It's just a bit of a punt and hopeful, and it all gets a bit gloomy.
I think it's a bit of a stretch, isn't it, hoping that Joffe's going to rescue things for you in his first Premier League appearance.
And even with Farshaw coming on, that he probably is what we kind of needed, but, you know, a guy who's not played a league game for 2 years, it felt like he just looked at the bench and was like, well, he's the senior player, so it'll have to be him, and hopefully it'll work. But
Costa Blanca actually on the feedback picked us up saying, sorry lads, but after sitting through 90 minutes of that, I couldn't appreciate the Farshaw praise. He wasn't good enough in the Championship and he isn't good enough now. The man underhit every pass he tried. I don't think it was praise of his performance necessarily. It's just that I feel like when he came on, there was at least someone stood in that space in front of the defence to take passes, even though he then
gave it away.
He'd get it.
But he wouldn't be the first to do that.
But it was telling, I think, that it felt like we were almost in better shape with him on there, stood there receiving passes and not doing anything with it, than just watching the defence
hoof aimlessly into
a void of nothingness in front of him.
He also spoke about that, didn't he? He was saying we were going wide too quickly and we didn't have options in the middle to play through the centre of the pitch. So I guess that's where Farshaw comes into it. But yeah, I guess you sort of going back to the Rads tweet there as well, aren't you?
Yes. It was interesting seeing Mosko actually, God rest his soul, diving into Hasenhüttl's tactical approach and finding reports about how he sets his teams up.
Once he worked out which half it was.
Yeah, to crush teams out wide, which is where we tend to play. So he just got the upper hand in that regard, didn't he? I mean, we did say going into this, I think it was on the Phil Hay show last week, talking about the back three, and Craig and Daniel both picked out the back three as an issue this time. Anybody who plays 2 strikers against us automatically causes us a massive problem, because our players never look good in that formation, do they? And it impacts midfield so much, particularly when Calvin's not there.
I think that's the thing. When you've got 3 actual centre-backs doing that system, they all play at centre-back, which is why you have the gap whereas Calvin knows sometimes to drop, sometimes to push forward and receive the ball. I mean, Calvin's just really good. It's the actual problem we have, because when he's not in the side, there's no one even vaguely approaching his level in that position. And it was a very weakened side, I think it's worth saying. It was certainly weaker than any team we had to field last season, unless someone can tell me otherwise. But it feels, if you look at, go through it and look at players who were first choice, played in their first choice position, you're probably looking at Melier, Llorente and Cooper. Is that it? Oh, Jack Harrison, I suppose.
I guess. I don't know. Because again, going back to that Tottenham game, we beat them with midfield of Robin Koch, Tyler Roberts and Matthias Klick. And that's like the triangle of doom, isn't it? If you'd ask most fans, and it kind of worked. But but it is, I think, yeah, like you say, with the back three, when Phillips isn't there, it's like, well, how do we get the ball forward? Which is the massive problem. The back three itself, I hated it in Bielsa's first season. I thought it was really counterproductive and I found it quite strange. But then I think we have got better with each season. but then it does seem to have become stunted this season. But again, I don't know if that's just we need our best player to be playing and then everything looks nicer.
Yeah, I was going to say, you put Rafinha into that and Phillips, and it is a completely different game you would expect from our point of view, wouldn't you? But that then terrifies everybody into an over-reliance on the good players and just going, well, they're going to be sold anyway. So
The fact is, though, if people saying, you know, it's a glimpse of the future if we lose Phillips and Rafinha, but the truth is if they leave, we'll have like £200 million to spend, and you would imagine we'll buy some footballers.
Yeah.
And hopefully ones that aren't just perennially injured.
Is there, I mean, this is the, I didn't even ask it, but are we seeing evidence 3 years down the line of maybe Bielsa's methods being a bit too much, do you think? And I ask that completely, that I love the man, you know, I would never turn on him, but I'm just playing devil's advocate and asking the question because we've had 3 seasons now where we've been hammered by injuries and the thin squad has exposed us terribly at times. Is it a problem?
I don't want to say.
It's one of the great, not great unspoken things. It's one of those fears, isn't it? The thing is with Bielsa's thin squad approach and insistence on using the 23s is that it's not a problem until it becomes a problem, if that makes sense.
Part of the issue, I think, is that because of Bielsa's methods, a dip, what would be called a dip in form elsewhere becomes a narrative around having burnt out and his, because his methods are so distinct. If he was, you know, if we'd appointed Eddie Howe and had him in charge for the rest of the season and played badly, people would just go, oh, they're just not playing very well. Whereas as it is with Bielsa, everyone goes, oh, well, they must be tired or whatever. Whereas like Jack Harrison was rubbish. It's as bad as he's played in months, years on the weekend.
That is the thing though, isn't it? Everybody's out of form and that's what's worrying.
But Jack Harrison, he'd not been away on international break. He should have been as rested as he ever is with his constant exercising with his incredible girlfriend and his dog. But you know, I'm sure he will have had a bit of a break by League United standards. But what happened to him? Like, he couldn't control a ball, which is unheard of from Jack Harrison. There were times where it came to him and he was Luke Varney-esque in his touch.
But with all of those days, maybe you'll be, I don't know if you're playing, you know, 5-a-side with your mates, or whether you played like 11-a-side or something like that, where it just all goes wrong, where nothing works. It's just worrying that they're professional footballers on tens of thousands of pounds a week and they encounter those problems. But yeah, but the thing is, you're always looking for big answers. And that's, I guess, what we've got here in the form of all these little headlines, like Bielsa is picked out by Kit, Steve and Ryan. Ryan's asking, do we think the players are no longer playing for the manager? No, I don't think so. I mean, Ryan suggests they looked as if they couldn't care less. Has there been a bust-up or an unwillingness to change tactics that's costing them? Or is it just that sometimes it doesn't work?
I think also, I bet it's probably really, really hard to work under Bielsa and play for him. Like, it's not easy. You've got to do a lot of work and it's really tiring. And then...
It's really hard to win. It's hard to win football matches.
Yeah, you've got to play football really well in the Premier League against other good footballers, and sometimes you don't and you get beat. I think, like you said, Michael, it's... tends to be just one extreme or the other with us, where you watch us against Watford and you think, I know they're kind of rubbish, but you think, God, we're brilliant and we just absolutely suffocated them. But then you watch us against Southampton when that isn't happening and it looks, they're just passing the ball into touch and not controlling it, and it's just veering from one side to the other.
It's funny, isn't it? All the existential terror that grips us when we're in the Championship for so long, and ultimately we got into a headspace where we couldn't be in that division because it was so bad for us in terms of all our individual mental health and also like the health of the club as a whole. There's also a bit of you thinks we can't be hanging around at this bottom end of the table because that's not good for us either, is it? It feels like we need to be mid-table at minimum just so we can all breathe a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, some of the teams as well that were meant to be doing badly and be with us down there are kind of doing all right now. Like Palace, at the start of the season, I thought, I wouldn't be surprised
They've only won one game.
Have they?
Yeah.
Oh, good one last night, didn't they?
No, they drew 2-2.
Oh, was it a draw in the end?
95th minute equaliser.
Oh, what a great bunch of lads, Arsenal. I didn't see that. I'll be honest, I saw them winning in the last minute, so I assume they had.
Yeah,
okay, well, that's good. But like Wolves have picked up form, as we'll come on to in a bit. And I don't know, I suppose I expected there to be a couple more teams.
I can't work whether it's good or bad that Watford are above us. Because I think, well, surely we'll finish above them. They're terrible. Yeah. But then at the same time, it's like, well, they have won a game more than us, which is kind of worrying.
With the exception that Watford have won 2 games, but Palace are in 14th and they've only won one match. Southampton have won one match. So have we. Burnley, Newcastle and Norwich all still to win a match. So as long as we get our asses in gear soon, we'll be fine.
I mean, Newcastle are a bit of an issue in so far as everyone expects them to drop like £1 billion in January, which may seem them clear of trouble. But it may not.
I think they'll probably spend some, they'll probably drop 40 million on Tarkowski. Because there'll be the Newcastle tax on top of everything and it'll make them marginally better. But I think they're in a world of trouble. I also think like Brentford yet could.
Brentford will be fine.
Could get
they look really good.
Yeah, all they need to do is go on a bad run of form. I don't. Imagine they've got 12 points, which feels like loads. But like, they if they have a bad run, Wolves could easily get pulled back into it because they either win or lose four of each they've got at the minute. So, you know, Leicester, they've only won three games. So all it takes is a win or two in this division to settle the nerves, doesn't it? I think that's just all we need to do is just calm down a little bit.
Looking at the rest of the Premier League does help. Yeah. There's not that many people. I think just being competent and sensible gets you a long way in the Premier League. And there's not that many clubs that you think, yeah, they've got a grand plan that they're going to stick to. And it's there's loads of logic to it and it's going to work. I mean, with Newcastle as well, the thing that gives me hope with them is Amanda Staveley coming in and saying that they've not spoken or thought about any of the performance staff and they've not spoken to him and they're still trying to work out. And you think, well, this takeover has been going on for ages and you've still not worked out that Steve Bruce is like useless. Like, come on.
Mm. I expected him to get sacked this week. I expected him to get sacked immediately after the Spurs game, but it does suggest there's not necessarily a massive plan in place. You're right, I do.
And I guess it is fairly difficult trying to get a manager mid-season, as proven by the fact they're apparently going to get Lampard, which...
Yeah, you're looking for somebody who's out of work, aren't
you? Appalling choice, I would suggest.
But the longer Bruce stays there as well, because, I mean, let's make no bones about it. Apart from that opening section against Spurs and then the late rally when they'd scored again, they were terrible, weren't they?
Didn't watch it. I was ignoring all football by that point. So.
Fair point. But it does give me hope that there are a lot, like you say, a lot of woeful teams in the Premier League. We just need to be not the most woeful.
I mean, on the Bielsa burnout thing, a few people did pick up on the general energy levels and Paul saying what's happened to our high energy and pressing game, and that did seem to be lacking. I do wonder if it's partly a structural thing of not having players in the right positions. So maybe you're expecting, like, maybe the part of that back three, maybe one of them doesn't quite know when to press or when to break that three to push forward in the way that Calvin does. He seems to just instinctively know where to be and when to apply pressure. And if one person, the thing with applying pressure is once you do it to one person, it then makes people rush passes and then everyone else's pressing works better. And it can be a bit of a system success or a system failure, can't it, in the way it works. And I think that's what we saw with Southampton, is that they just had the better of us with it this weekend.
I think maybe you have to credit them a little bit as well, because the start doing the rounds was that it was the first time we'd been out round under Bielsa for however long. So maybe it was kind of a bit of them making us look a bit more sluggish than we used to as well. It'll be interesting to see how they get on next week, whether there's that championship drop-off of when teams would raise the games to play against us and then we're knackered afterwards. And I'm also really interested to know what kind of week the Leeds players have at training, if they've been outrun in a game, and whether Bielsa just doubles down and beasts them up.
Well, let's finish this on a positive or two then. Matt, Nathan and Carl, all trying to be positive.
God bless you.
Carrying the torch for Moscow. Carl thought, yeah, match ball was pretty much spot on. Good. Did disagree that the defence was bad, as we didn't concede a lot of big chances, and that wasn't bad considering how anonymous the midfield was. Thought we defended fine in the main. I'm not sure we ever criticised the defence, did we?
I don't know. I suppose we looked a bit stretched, but you're going to be, aren't you,
when
there's no one in front of you.
Yeah, there's nothing going forward. So let's assume we were right there and Carl's wrong. Nathan said, forget about it. Move on. We're not Norwich, Watford or Burnley, who are three teams that will finish below us this season. There's a confident man.
Yeah, we'll probably be fine. Maybe. I mean, Matt's positive was that they're meant to be good at set pieces and we handled them okay. I mean, they did nearly score from a couple. There was the one where there was a near post flick and then someone at the back post kind of supermanned in and just missed it. So they had a couple of chances. And also, the reason they're good at set pieces is because of James Ward-Prowse, who wasn't playing.
Great.
So that probably helped. So apart from those ones, maybe that helped a bit. I don't know. But yeah, that was a great positive. But let's not do a back three again, ever.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness.
If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This part of the show is about Southampton's fans. We find out what's being said on the Southampton fan channels. We've opted to take a slightly different path, haven't we, today?
Yeah, because it's too miserable, isn't it?
Should we get the pain out of the way first?
Yeah, this is Matchday Vlogs, a YouTube thing. Southampton fans being happy. Whatever. Pathetic.
This is the best I've seen us this season. Like, the other games when you say we deserve to get something out of it, we did, but we also didn't do enough to win the game. Today, like, we should have, you know, we should be, again, we should be creating more chances, but we were so, so good today. Everyone on that pitch with that, you know, you could put them at 8 out of 10 or across the board, some at 10 out of 10. They were wicked today, not a foot wrong.
Deserved winners, and Redmond's had a fantastic game. Bear in mind that the last time we got a game from open play, a goal from open play, sorry, was from a Redmond assist. Just think about that, or the Redmond haters out there, but man, what a performance today. Should have scored more though. We're just going to need to get a bit more clinical in front of goal, but wow, what a game.
Well, that's nice for them, isn't it? I'm glad they had a nice time.
Sound all happy, don't we? Like, watch the team win. Oh, I've just, oh, pathetic.
Right, well, that'll do.
Fancy being so happy about that.
Clowns.
I mean, there's literally not a single thing wrong with them, is there?
You had a nice time, you did nothing wrong.
Just fine.
Great bunch of lads, right.
It's hard to feel anything about Southampton though, isn't it? Because they're just so mild-mannered. They're a bit like Reading of, like, when Reading are in the Championship, you think, yeah, whatever.
Right. Yeah, I know, like before the game when they had like a brass band out and stuff, and then I thought it's a bit Southampton, isn't it? Saints brass, it said on it, which is different if you're going rhyming slang, isn't it? A Saints brass. But
so that concludes the Southampton part of propaganda. We know that they're happy. What else have we got from the wider world of propaganda?
This is a little palate cleanser in Moscow's honour. Nice. It's Dick Van Shitbitch was very popular the other week after Moscow's attempts at Cockney accents, and thanks to someone called Alistair Beckett King. He doesn't follow us. I follow him, so I happen to see this clip. He's found a worse Cockney accent than Moscow. So have a listen to this. This is Marlene Dietrich, who is obviously fairly famous. I think possibly crucially was in silent movies in the early part of her career.
Right.
But this is her. I mean, she's German and I think latterly lived in America and France. So the accent is probably going to be a little bit mixed.
Yeah.
But this is her attempting a Cockney accent in a 1957 film, Witness for the Prosecution.
Mm.
I'll give you something to dream about, mister. Want to kiss me, ducky? Ha! I didn't suppose you would.
Christine Vole did that to you.
Not her. The chap I was going with, he was a bit younger than me, but I loved him. And then she come along, started seeing him on the sly, and then one day he cleared out. But I went after him and I found him together. I told him what I thought of her and he cut me face up proper.
Did you go to the police about it?
Ooh, me? Not likely.
Ooh, me?
Besides, it wasn't his fault. Not really. It was hers. It was all hers. Getting them away from me, turning them against me. But I waited me time to pay her back. And it's come now.
We did a tour of not just the Isles there, but I think there's hints of Australia and all sorts going on.
It was definitely South African at points, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought it was South African. If there hadn't been the tweet saying this was a Cockney accent, there is no way I'd have got that.
So anyway, that's something for Moscow to aspire to.
Have you got another clip then, friend?
This is a clip of Neil Warnock, which people will have will have probably heard, but it was just a little clip of him saying the phrase. But it's worth hearing the full version where he goes on to explain it.
Yeah, this is interesting.
I was watching Forrest Gump last night, Mark. You know, did you see that one of tourist films? And he said, I thought just like myself, it's like, my team is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
You've got an empty box of chocolates.
Yeah. It's so I thought, well, it's instead of life is like a box of chocolates, it's my team.
Oh, thanks for explaining that, Neil. I hadn't got the reference.
Bless him. I don't know who the journalist is as well, but I thought he handled it pretty well because...
An awkward chuckle on the Zoom call.
He left the gap for Neil to have a little laugh. And he was like, like I said, it's like an empty box of chocolates, isn't it?
Yeah.
But Neil was like, no, it's because I'm referencing the film. I think you seem to have missed it.
Did he also say, you've seen that Forrest Gump? I've seen one or two of his films, that Forrest Gump. Does he not realise Forrest Gump's a character?
Is there a sequel? I didn't know that.
Has he heard of the guy Tom Hanks? No? Anyway. I enjoyed that, yeah. Isn't he toe curling? That's all I'll say about
him. He is dreadful.
About him. Speaking of which.
Staying in South Yorkshire. Let's go to Hecky.
Yep.
I was trying to find if he's done anything recently. With ball, without ball, etc. I've managed to find this on the YouTube channel of someone called Callum McFadden. He's got 26 subscribers as Callum McFadden. He's got a full, like, it's like a 40-minute interview with Paul.
Don't forget to like and subscribe, guys.
He's all right. I think it's quite a decent channel. He's got...
I meant for us, never mind Callum.
Yeah, us, just two. Hit the like button.
Please do.
Subscribe.
Feed the algorithm.
Hit the bell.
Put food on the table.
But yeah, and only I was the 11th person who'd watched this.
Really?
When I went on. So Paul Heckingbottom not getting the hits. But he's got an interview with Mark Warburton on there, which has got...
he's got an interview with him, and there's nobody seen it.
No one's seen it.
Oh, bless him.
Yeah. So, but anyway, this is him. This is Paul Heckingbottom talking about his relationship with Radrizzani and what he did at Leeds. And you can kind of see where he's going with it.
I basically laid the foundations for this.
Listen.
Yeah, I bet it is.
There's a respect there, I think, between us both in terms of it was only now after I've left that I think they really realise the work that was done, you know, both in terms of with the players.
With the players.
And without the...
He doesn't say without the players, yeah. Sadly. But it is worth listening to the full clip just to hear what he does have to say, because he almost implies that they're still in touch a bit, and I wonder if this is mainly in his head.
Right, okay.
But probably more importantly, behind the scenes and just setting up a way of working which is going to help to bring a bit of success, and we speak about that regularly now. So yeah, it's again from my point of view it's frustrating, but it was Andres say brand new owner, you know, new in the job, and he's a totally different owner now, you know, off the back of his experiences, just like we learn as managers, owners learn as owners, and it's good for us to speak about it now, because my next owner I might have might be brand new again. And you need to be able to understand that and know where they're coming from. Just like Andreas now is more skilled and worked with different managers, and he understands his role more as an owner. So yeah, you're probably right club, wrong time, if you know what I mean, for me.
Two things I've taken out of that I've just scribbled down.
Canary, he's in a coal mine.
The subtext there. I could have been doing this with Leeds in the Premier League. That's one of the subtexts there. And the other one, Radrizzani didn't understand my genius at the time. That's what I took from that.
Do you remember how Radrizzani sacked him? Wasn't he on holiday at the time, Hecky? And didn't he send Ortoroc in here to go sack him?
In Greece, wasn't he?
So when he talked about the respect that Radrizzani had for him.
And he made him go to bloody Burma as well, didn't he? Yeah. He sent him to Myanmar for the post-season trip thinking, yeah, he's not going to be here for that, but I need someone to put the cones out before the game. I mean, it's very bold to say that he set in place ways of working that have led to success, because I think Bielsa has completely changed everything.
Are you not aware that he came and relayed the pitch in the summer himself?
Did he?
He did, yeah. Stitched all those artificial fibres
in fairness,
himself by hand.
A gardener is probably about his level, which is to undersell what happened with that pitch, because it's very complicated science.
Because you would think, wouldn't you, that there'd be something in his record, either before Leeds or after Leeds, that would suggest that Radrizzani didn't fully appreciate what he had at his disposal there, but I'm just wondering what it is. Anything?
Well, he did all right at Barnsley for a bit. Mm-hmm. Admittedly, they had, I think they were the worst form in the Championship when we got him.
Yeah.
Then he came to us and was bad. Went to Hibs and was bad.
Mm-hmm.
They compare him to Bielsa up there, don't they?
Oh, the
way
stuff.
The way he turned around that club.
Yeah, I think he left them bottom of the league or second bottom or something. And then, yeah,
it's because the owner there, I think, was quite new and just didn't probably fully appreciate, and he's now a different owner. Now he's
that's true. And then he had the little spell at Sheffield United where the bar had been set so low for him. He took over, they had about 4 points or something ridiculous, didn't he? So he got like a win or two,
like an adult entering a child's egg and spoon race is what I'm going to liken it to.
But it's interesting. He's a bit Warnock in his delusions. I would suggest
I like him for it. Right, what we got this? Who's flying Pig United?
It's a Scum fan.
All right, okay.
So, did you see what happened in their game?
I did. They were winning, weren't they?
Let's say
they were.
I think they were.
I'll check.
They just got a late equaliser, is what had happened. So I know you said you'd not watched any football.
Well, do you know what? Listening to this made me seek out the highlights because it sounded hilarious.
It was good. So basically, Rashford came on, got an equaliser. They were looking to push on, but then straight from kickoff, Leicester went and scored.
Right. Let me just check the order of the scoring. It's taken a while for my Sky Sports app to catch up. So, They equalised on 82 minutes, yeah. And then Vardy scored on 83 to put them in front. So Man United were never in front at any point, but I'd had a sniff of it then.
Yeah, and this is from Flying Pig United's live watch along.
Look at the pass from Victor Lindelof. What a ball over from Lindo, mate. That vision dude. Lindelof's better than the slab. Slab can piss off. But Lindelof, fair play. What a great pass. What a great pass. What a finish there by Marcus Rashford as well. Pass Schmeichel. Get in there, my son. Shit chance on the other end straight away for Leicester, though. Played into the six-yard box. Shot and goal. No! Jamie Vardy into the top right-hand corner. On the half volley, breaks United hearts and makes it 3-2 to the Foxes. We've absolutely shat the bed. Gone to sleep after we've scored the goal, man, and it's 3-2 to Leicester City. I don't believe it. It's a fucking crumble job again. Look at this. From the kickoff, guys. From the fucking kickoff, guys. Completely fallen asleep.
I've noticed from these watch-alongs, they do half straddle commentator and half straddle fan on a lot of them, and that there's a lot of that in that is like telling you all the details of what's going on, which I could see with my own eyes, I guess.
If anyone listens to Atletico Mints, there's a character on that called Neil Hunt, and he's a bit like that,
right?
If you know it you'll know it. But onto the kickoff, which is from I don't quite know how it's split from True Geordie, which was its own YouTube thing, but it's basically them watching football.
Yeah.
So he obviously, as the name implies, the main man doing it is a Newcastle fan, but then they've got a Man United fan. There's that Chelsea
Simpleton Rory.
Simpleton Rory, that's what he's called. But there's
only by his friends behind his back.
Adam. He said McCola. I don't know if it was MC Cola, but he seems to be called Adam McCola.
MC Cola's a good name.
It is a good name. That's why I thought maybe he'd gone with it, but it seems to just be his surname. But he's watching this game with a load of other people who are basically just laughing in his face, and he's. I mean,
that is the joy of Rory on there as sort of as the fool in the studio.
Understandably, he's not taking it particularly well.
Yes! Oh my god! Oh my god! It's Jamie Vardy. It's 3-2.
There's always goals in these bastard games.
I love football. I actually love football's the winner.
You don't
winner.
Love football. You
I
love,
love
United
football,
losing.
Bro.
You don't love.
I love being above you in the league, baby. I love it.
I love it, baby.
He doesn't love
McCall.
I
love
United losing.
I love United losing.
I'm so sorry. That's it. That says Leicester it all winning. About you, bro. You're a wet wipe.
Leicester winning, United losing.
That says it all about
you. I won a Premier League in 10 years.
You haven't watched the City screen.
If we're going to watch the screen.
We're 2-0 up. You're 3-2 down. We love it.
Literally just watch, by the way.
Good. There is an MC Cola, by the way. Yeah, I think it's a product in India.
Okay. Yeah. Like Panda Pop, a Panda Pops type version. That is a thing that when I've worked with Man United fans, this is a thing that they do. If you ever laugh at Man United, they go, "This is just because this is what you're like. You just don't want to see us do well, and it's just jealousy and stuff." You think, "Yeah, but it's kind of funny sometimes."
We don't want to see you do well.
Well, no.
Spoiler alert. That's how football works.
Yeah, when they got to European finals and stuff over the years,
like people are always trying to carve an angle, and that's one of the things like that happens on Twitter quite a lot, even when you lose. And I caught wind of Be Sotted, which is the Brentford, I think it's fanzine podcast or both, but Be Sotted, trying to claim some sort of moral high ground having lost to Chelsea, because I think Chelsea put out a fun tweet from their official accounts, whoever scored the goal against Brentford to win it, put him in like a beekeeper's outfit, calling him the beekeeper, and he was spraying, you know, that gas, whatever it is, the smoke that they use to subdue bees when they're getting into the hive.
You know about it then?
Yeah, I'm just falling back on my widespread honey gathering experience.
I had a beekeeper once in my garden. I had a big swarm of bees, and the man came and got rid of them.
Did he de-swarm your garden?
He did. He came with he had that
smoky thing. Yeah,
He had that and
the bellows
and all the gear. Mm-hmm. And because he was very fat, and I assumed that they could bite through his costume because his belly was pushing it so much, he had to stuff a load of cardboard boxes down his front as well, so they wouldn't sting him. Which I enjoyed.
Is that your excuse? Is it? This is cardboard.
It's cardboard boxes.
But anyway, so they tried to carve an angle, and then Besotted, were trying to carve an angle on this Chelsea tweet saying, "Oh, imagine that several years ago, this bus stop in Hounslow is what they refer to themselves, don't they, to Brentford, because it's sort of thrown at them as an insult. Imagine Chelsea being delighted with beating a bus stop in Hounslow. It's like you've just lost. You can't forever be plucky little Brentford. You know, at the end of the day, you've got to take the defeats on the chin, haven't you? You can't claim high ground when you've lost." But anyway,
they could have won that, in fairness.
I don't care. They lost, didn't they? I do not care.
Finally, then on to we are just sticking with Man United because you don't want to hear Southampton fans being happy, do you? It's better to hear.
I like this guy, Johnny United.
Yeah, he's the guy we've had him before. He does a big rant on and then goes, "See you later, have a nice day."
Yeah, he just kind of, there's no pause for breath. It's just like, "See you later, guys. Thanks for watching."
He lives in Bradford, apparently.
Oh, so really?
Keep an eye out for him. And if he's angry.
Is he the former military one? He has experience in the forces.
So if he's angry and still has any of his military gear, Dan lives in Bradford too.
Yeah.
Keep an eye out for each other.
Well, I think in the schools, the military gear is fairly standard as well, issue, just to get you through.
Fair enough. But I mean, he's been.
The mean streets of BD10.
He's been moaning for a long time about wanting Solskjaer out. And if we're perfectly honest about it, he's right.
Yeah, he is, but Solskjaer must remain in position.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's doing a great job there. As much as he does annoyingly seem to have it over us, like generally speaking, they're not going anywhere with him in charge, so it's quite nice. But he appeared on a YouTube channel called This Is Football, and here he is being very calm about everything. And this is when basically a bloke has come on who is now converted to Ollie out, and he's getting kind of angry that he was there first.
Listen, I watched last night, right? I watched the United, you know, United stand. I watched the United stand. I'm not going to disclose the name of the person because they're not here to defend themselves. I'll never bring somebody's name into something when they're not here to defend themselves. But this person had the fucking audacity to turn around and say, "Oh yeah, it's getting hard to defend now. There's cracks appearing. Cracks appearing now.
I'm not.
Now it's broken. There's no cracks appearing." The cracks were appearing over 12 months ago, but people don't see. You can't see.
My issue is, before you could say that he didn't have his full squad, he didn't have the strong enough squad.
Oh, bullshit!
Hold on, Johnny. Listen, relax. Let me finish.
I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. That squad were going to be Leicester in fucking FA Cup.
I have my reason. It doesn't need to be the same as yours. It doesn't have to be on the same thing.
I can't get that upset about football anymore. I don't know. But just for the record, they're sixth in the table.
He reminds me of George Dawson Shooting Stars when he sometimes snaps at the contestant just to scare him. I just imagine him sat there in a big pink romper suit.
Bless him.
All right, guys, thanks for watching. Like and subscribe. See you later.
But you can tell there that his microphone can't cope with the volume he's going at either.
Yeah.
And at the end of this next clip, because he's on a panel, you wouldn't know of this, but there are six of them on this discussion. There's a bloke sort of trying to host it. And I think he's the one that you can kind of hear laugh at the end of this clip.
Was last year good enough for you, the way we play football? Was that good enough?
And for me, we've improved.
We're playing football. Did we play good football last year,
Johnny, you're going back again and again to last season. I'm not talking about
I don't understand. I don't understand why it takes so long for people for the pain to fucking drop. Why does it take so long?
Hey, listen.
If it walks like a dog, looks like a dog, and smells like a dog, and barks like a dog, it's a fucking dog.
He deserves a chance. No matter what you do, he deserves a chance.
I knew that line was coming as well. He's animated, isn't he?
He is. But in conclusion,
I mean, the entitlement that underpins his anger is fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, he's sort of right. Like, I am kind of the opinion that if they got a decent manager, they probably would be in a title race.
I like that. Have you seen that they're gearing up for another protest potentially against Liverpool? What are they protesting?
Well, it was against...
Just bought Sancho for, what, 75 million?
And spent a huge amount on Ronaldo. Yeah, the green and gold until we're sold type thing did seem to disappear largely, didn't it, over summer when they decided to buy a really good centre-back, a really good winger, and Cristiano Ronaldo, whatever he is. I was good to see him get an absolute slating actually in the weekend. Yeah. I think someone gave him a 3 out of 10.
He doesn't and can't press, can he? Like the analysis seems to suggest that he can't press because he's not physically capable of doing it anymore. So it kind of undoes all their whole game plan, which I think is great. That's what we were hoping, that he'd come in and destabilise everything.
Yeah. You imagine he kind of runs it as much as Solskjaer does as well. So this is finally on Johnny then. He's just really... If you couldn't tell his position,
is he annoyed?
He just wants to let you know. Just in conclusion.
Listen, I don't think people understand how fucking beyond the key word beyond pissed off I am with this fucking manager and his coaching staff. I am like, you get to ND Tether, I'm about 10 miles past it. I'm beyond. Like, I need these guys to fuck off out of this club. Really, fucking bunch of fucking clowns.
Just in case you weren't sure.
I'm glad he clarified that.
So he had to tell us he was pissed off.
It makes me sad that you guys didn't do the match ball in like the wilderness years, because I feel like it would have got to that point after the 6-0 at Sheffield Wednesday. That'd have been you.
Well, the thing is, I think we'd have ended up laughing, wouldn't we, at the stupidity of it all, because it went beyond anger into despair and farce, didn't it?
Yeah, I think the early stages of it, there'd have been anger. It was more like Championship relegation, I think, is where they were my angriest years, I think.
Yeah.
Like yelling at Paul Butler for still being here and stuff. But I think by the time we were in like, yeah, fourth year of finishing 15th or whatever, you just were like, well,
you beat your brow beaten by then, aren't you?
Whatever. There was never anything to cling to, I suppose, was there? So it was. Whereas for Scum, it's still kind of within reach, isn't
they're
it?
They're framed by the last 20 years, aren't they? The last 20, 25 years of almost unrelenting success. It's just gradually tapered off.
And they're still doing all right. It's a bit like Liverpool when they had to cope with not winning the league every year, and they still did pretty well during that period. They were never in danger of relegation, were they? And they still won FA Cups and stuff.
And a few Champions Leagues here and there, which must have been awful.
Real tough times for those.
You've got to remember that nobody suffered like Newcastle fans.
Well.
They've suffered so much with a couple of relegations, but absolutely loads of Premier League football. Mm. It's almost like people are frustrated with mediocre coaches, isn't it?
I did enjoy a clip I saw of one of their fans outside the ground saying something like, no politics, just football, and we're rich. And you sort of think, well, that's related to the first point you made, but never mind.
Well, I saw the Newcastle game on Sunday, and it fueled my total and utter nihilism. Like, when Leeds lose, I just want to tear it all down. I want it all to go away. I mean, like, you know, we met on, because I broke my telly on Saturday night. But the kids kicked a football into the telly.
The kids?
On Saturday night. Yep, it was the kids. Kicked a football into the telly.
Is this just in case your insurance company are listening?
On Saturday night, and broke it. It was right in the top corner, though, so I am pleased with the execution of that. But I felt very, very embarrassed, because it's the sort of thing that, you know, you would tell the kids off for doing. But I had to meet you to get your spare telly on Sunday morning, didn't I? But you took your kids to the trampoline park just on Lowfields Road. So mm-hmm. You can see it's the other side of the motorway.
It used to be the Magic Sponge.
Yeah, you can see Elland Road just down the way. It's obviously the East Stand is looming. The big High Sense advert is very visible just over the motorway there. But I couldn't even look at it. It was like you know, when a guilty dog has stolen some sausages or whatever from the kitchen. And just refuses to look at you because they know they've done wrong. That's how I felt about Elland Road.
It's like, not now. Yeah. Not now, Elland Road.
I didn't even look at it. I just refused to even... I turned my back on it. Just wouldn't even cast eyes on the East Stand because I was angry. But I'm all right a couple of days on. I think it's fine, isn't it? We're not in Johnny United entitled yet, I don't think, are we?
Not yet. I've never been that angry about anything, to be perfectly honest.
No, I can't be bothered. It's just easier to just turn everything off.
Well, and on which note, let's end the show there. And next week, it's Wolves propaganda. Weird thing is, because I'm going to a wedding in that way. It's over towards Shropshire. I lose geography once you get sort of south of, I don't know, about Manchester. I don't know, it all blends into one. Going to a wedding over towards Shropshire, but we're staying in Wolverhampton the night after we play Wolves at Elland Road. So I might go back on the team bus or something like
Travelodge?
That. Travelodge? Premier Inn.
Yeah. I have actually stayed in the Travelodge at Wolves. Yeah. It was a treat.
I was going to say, I hope I didn't get the same room, because I know what you've done on some of those rooms. Bloody hellfire. Right, well, we'll return with more propaganda.
Sounds worse than it is, that, by the way. It just means I've been sick.
We'll return in the wake of the Wolves game. Obviously, we've got the main show to look out for on your feed. And thanks for watching and listening to this one. We'll see you in a bit.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. and they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.